Howdy.
I'm going to do a lesson today, God willing, titled, This World Is Not Enough. We've played with things over the years. Some of it's been helpful, some of it's not. But sometimes statistics help us to kind of see what's going on in a nation. The worst thing a church can do is be oblivious to its nation and the nations around it. Because of those things, we live in a world where a lot of it's evil. It has evil intent. And we say, well, we're a Christian nation, we in the United States. If you believe that, I've got some real estate in a mud hole I want to sell you. I'm going to tell you, the United States is moving itself into the same slush pit as the rest of the world. But there's a cure for that. That's not something that can go unfixed. That we're living in a troubled time is a statement that's haunting people all over this country. In January 2021, the CDC confirmed the first coronavirus case in the United States. It's now August of 2022, and churches all over the United States have been losing members at an alarming rate. And you know why? It's because of fear. It's not because they're out of gas. It's not because their foot's broken, they can't drive anymore. It's fear. There's been a foundation of fear laid in this country. And I struggle to wonder if all of that COVID stuff that we got wasn't planted for that reason. But I can't know that. So if you know it, you do. If you don't know it, I don't either. So it's now August of 22 and the churches are fearful. Many people have quit their jobs. I mean, quit good jobs and started taking the dole off of the government for their expense. Something's wrong with that. That I know of or remember, we here hadn't had any deaths among us because of COVID. We've had some sickness. The truth is, if people stay out long enough, they're not coming back. Now, I say that with one exception. Let them get near death, and they'll be all over you. Oh, I just love this place. Well, where were you for the last 12 years? You know, we should ask questions like that. I'm not trying to be mean, but that's the way life is, isn't it? Doesn't that happen every day? All over the place. It's not just among us. We have been bombarded by fear. And fear has a way of hanging on and not letting go. It wants to hold on. Now, let me tell you something. When you have fear, that is satanic. God is not a God of fear. Now, I know the Bible says fear God. Now, that fear God, that word fear that's used there is a reverence word. Revere God. People all over are fearful. You make the choice whether you think it was projected or it just happened. And I'll keep my opinion to myself, though I have one. People are bombarded so much, it's causing them to have sanity problems. I'm going to tell you what, I am sick to death of having to do a whole bunch of stuff just to go in a store. Or to come into an assembly. I want to be healed again. I want to be free again. I will be free and I am free in Jesus Christ. And nobody can take that away from me. You cannot give me a poison that would change it. The best advice we can do if we're fearful is be as careful as you can. But never let it go to fear.
If it goes to fear, it will take you to the pit of the earth. Stand up with it. Stand up strong in the process.
Do you know the self, yourself, is the root of fear?
Satan will come in
and he'll try to stoke up the fires of it. Do not be afraid. To inhibit or suppress fear will not transcend it. Its cause must be discovered and understood and then dissolved. I will not allow fear to control me. I've done a lot of dumb things in my life. I've hung out with a lot of church people that do a lot of dumb things in their life. But I'm not going to let fear take me down. Fear is a killer of life that is brought to you by none other than Satan. It is satanic, and it has the power of satanic influence if we allow it. In 586 B.C., Babylonian warriors marched their surviving Hebrew people away from their home in Jerusalem. How would you like for somebody to come on our soil and just start to scoop you up and transpose you into another place? Don't think it can't happen. These captives, as they were being taken away, gazed through their tears as their city they loved was infiltrated by these foreigners who were taking over the land. In their minds, they had thought such a thing impossible. Oh, man, we're the greatest nation on earth. We say that. United States, the greatest nation on earth. Let me tell you what, I love this country. Do you? I don't like this country. I love this country. I don't like it much. I don't like what's going on in it. For a long time. Not just now. Their thinking was that nobody, that's just what people thought. This is what a lot of American people think. They're thinking that no one could successfully control our nation because we are a Christian nation. If we could go to the sausage factory, we could find the biggest baloney there is right there. We're not a Christian nation. If we were a Christian, where are they? If people are Christians, why are they hiding? Why are you hiding? Well, I don't want to get killed. Let me tell you something. Being dead is not that big a deal. You're just dead. But it's not over. Death is not your enemy. The enemy is where the change is and God's magnificence is taken out of the way. That's where the problem is. Considering the rubble and the rabble that fought against this milestone, Israel was ecstatic. In the book of Ezra, chapter 3, verse 10 and 11, when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments and with their trumpets and the Levites, the son of Asaph, with cymbals took their places to praise the Lord as prescribed by David, king of Israel. With praise and thanksgiving they sang to the Lord, His good, His love toward Israel endures forever. And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. What a worship experience that must have been when all of that was going on. What gladness they must have felt. But the celebration and the whole process of it seemed haunted and something seemed to be missing. Is it possible to do wonderful, good stuff and still have something missing? Ezra 3, 12 and 13 says, but many of the older priests and the Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept
aloud. When they saw the foundation of the temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy. No one could distinguish the sound of the shouts of the joy from the sound of weeping, because the people made such a noise and the sound was heard far away. Do you know what it's going to take to change this country? Lots of noise. We cannot lay back and do nothing. Now, here's the deal. I could go to Washington, D.C., though I have no interest in going to Washington, D.C. But I do revere my nation. I grew up in this nation. I will die in this nation unless we're carted off first. My children will grow up here, my grandchildren. But I want it back the way it was. It didn't get here because of John Adams and those guys, though they did wonderful stuff. It got here because this nation was formed and decided it wanted to be different from every nation in the world, where it was for freedom and it could be expressed any way you wanted to. If you got an opinion, you say it. We don't like what you got to say, but we don't have to listen to you. But you don't have to shoot me because of it, like it does in other nations. I suggest that these twin reactions of laughter and weeping form a parable of some sort. There's something going on in that. For all of us, like Israel, there's milestone moments that come along and fill us with joy. I'm going to tell you what. I hate to confess this to you, but since I'm old and I'm hanging out with old people, I can tell you this. I'm kind of a pessimist. I can be borderline a grump. I grew up pessimistic, so I couldn't find the right place in life. But for all of us, like Israel, there's a milestone moment that fills us with incredible joy. I love those times. What was going on with this thing that was happening? It was like a symphony orchestra that swelled with power and sweetness and carried refreshing tunes or refreshing lights. This is what was going on in the nation when there was a revival. It was like the dawn that breaks over the Grand Canyon and the painting of the colors and canvas of the rock that just leaves us speechless. Night before last, I walked outside to take the pups out. There was this moon standing up there. No clouds around it. It was just up there bald-headed. And I went in the house. I got Nita by hand, said, "Come out here. Y'all need to see this." She come out there, looked at me, "Whew, that's a moon." I'd already figured that out. It was just like we couldn't quit looking at it. So we got back in the house, went to sleep, got up. Next day, we're coming in the bedroom. Right out that window was that same old moon, but it moved. It was following them. Do you know God does majestic things just to cheer His people up? He does that for us. It's like a newborn that's laid in your arms for the first time. When Nita and I got married, she said, "How many kids you want?" I said, "None." Ended up with two. And I got two boys that would put their life on the line for me or their mama. Golden moments like this come at any time and often enter unannounced, because that's the way God does business. I'm going to tell you something. As far as fear is concerned, I'm not scared. I've had too many things happen to me to be scared. I've been hurt in just about every fashion that could happen. You just name it, it's happened. Golden moments come unannounced by God. And yet, even when you have the sweetest of times, there's still shadow. But it's okay. Don't you worry. Don't you be fearful. Don't you let Satan turn you into something that you're not. Because the God who created us, the God who gave us life, the God who has protected us is on our side. If Satan swats at you and slaps at you, let him do it. He cannot outdo the God of heaven. He is not as powerful as the God of heaven. Splendor rarely lasts. You remember Moses, where his face shone? The glory fades, but the promise stands. Thrill wasn't what we thought it'd be. The achievement we did didn't deliver what we expected. We talked about beauty. I have to tell you, I was never a pretty person. I'm getting rough, and I'm looking around here thinking maybe y'all caused that. The thrill, not what we thought it would be. We may be like Peter, James, and John, begging the Lord that we might build a house on our personal Mount of Transfiguration so we could stay and bask in the glory of it. But we're not allowed to do that. Our laughter is laced with longings. And I'm just telling you stuff that's true. This is reality. What we like is to go off in a fantasy. That's why we like movies. Because we get off in a fantasy world and we live a life of somebody else for a little bit. But let me tell you what happens. When you shut it down and walk home, you take it with you. So we have to learn to live with that. Our laughter's laced with longings that go unanswered, and the high times are tinged with the incomplete feeling. What is going on here? What's the explanation for this strange partnership between joy and sorrow? Do you know that quite often gold medalists leave this world class depressed very often? If you want a gold medal, be wonderful what it is. But here's what you better know about a gold medal. There's always somebody going to beat you. Every time. And sometimes you'll lose. The world doesn't satisfy. We don't believe these kind of things when we're 20 years old because we think, if I can just go to school, if I can drive a car, if I get to hang out with those people who wear these clothes or that clothes, I'll have exactly what I need. Let me tell you, that is not so. All of that fades in a fraction of moments. No matter how good you are, there's going to be somebody better. This world and all of it offers falls short. Then it falls apart into an evil world. What we may be learning is that God may have designed it to look like that, to make us like Him. You ever considered that God might have worked on us so that we would be drawn to Him? It's almost as if the world isn't going to last. In Romans 8:20 and 23, listen to this. That we talked about stuff in class this morning, about life, heaven and hell, and all that kind of stuff. You listen close to this. For the creation, this is Romans 8:20 to 23. Creation would include how much? All of it. The creation was subjected to frustration. Not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself would be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in pains of childbirth right up to this present time, and not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our body. Behind this gorgeous sunset and flowers, creation groans. Beyond the most
wondrous experiences of life, we sigh because it has the appearance of being nothing but hollow. You can hear it in our songs when we sing and we tell the story of our constant craving. Many of our songs, the constant craving for what we cannot have. The earth leaves us wanting more. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says and makes it plain, He has made everything appropriate in His time. He has also put eternity in our heart. Let me ask you a question, if I can. If He put it in our hearts, where is it now? In our heart. What happens if you go out of this room? Still in your heart. What if you go through a trial tomorrow? Still in your heart. God has already put eternity in your heart. God sprinkles just enough of eternity over the earth and over us to make us feel important and valuable. I want to show you what's going on in the world right now. There's a song that I want you to hear. John Lennon, y'all know John Lennon? I grew up on real music, and I didn't do much with John Lennon and people who had more hair on their head than I could peel in the back of my truck. I mean, I just didn't go there. John Lennon had a song. You will recognize the song. This is John Lennon's song, Nowhere Man. It captures the cynicism that was going on in a time when people, like they are now, were seeking more answers in life and the meaning of life in a disturbed world. And I'm telling you, it's just like taking now and then, and we're having that same discussion. Nobody knew who they were. Oh, John Lennon decides, I can fix that for you. He's a real now here man, sitting in his now here land, making all his now here plans for nobody. Now, I've done a lot of planning and I've made a lot of stuff, but I didn't do it for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view. Knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like me and you? Life is just a tragic comedy that means nothing. Maybe the best we can do is follow Solomon's philosophy and say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Or could it be that God has brushed the commonplace with the scent of another place? Another dwelling. Just so you know, according to Paul, 1 Corinthians 15, the good world has been perverted by sin. And it will be cleaned up. And it will be restored. At the resurrection, you're not the only thing that's going to get cleaned up. The world was perverted by sin, and it will be cleaned up and restored after the resurrection, from which we awaken. At that resurrection, we will be changed by God and cleaned up and restored in His good world, which some of His own had destroyed. And the great news is that we'll live in the same presence of the same God we adore. Quit worrying about going to heaven. I would rather be where God walks, wouldn't you? He will walk among us. The church said, Amen.